It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this, the final day of May 2018. There will never again be another day quite like this. Of course, that's the case with every day. It's just a matter of being mindful of that fact. It's May the 31st, 2018. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and participate in the ongoing multimedia madcap wacky zany real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the hours in which the program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. If you do so, you'll be met by VT Blom. I'm in there. So is longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who has also folded space to become Man Cave because he's a spacing guild master. And, of course, midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, also joins us. There's Silent R. Lamar wandering into the room. You're mighty welcome to come along, too. Yes, indeedly doodly. And we have no subscribers to thank for this 31st day of the month, but we'll just generally thank all the subscribers for taking care of about a week's worth of programming every month. Thank you all very kindly, and thanks to everybody who keeps the program on the air. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And I guess it's going to be more celebrity hand-wringing today. What was the phrase Roger Stone used? Ah, yes, it's Samantha Bee's time in the barrel. That's his phrase, isn't it? Because I think this is a broader philosophical debate. Samantha Bee, in her show Full Frontal for TBS, Samantha Bee used a word that I will not use. I won't even use it to report on it. Because at least in the United States, and I understand it's completely different in other English-speaking countries, and in the UK, in Australia, this word, while obviously obnoxious and intended as an insult, is sort of used across gender lines. But the word has gender connotations of being the most hateful gendered term that is generally known to be used in insulting a member of the female half of the species. Samantha Bee used it to describe address. It wasn't a description, it was an address. She used it to address Precious Ivanka, in particular, in taping her show, Samantha Bee referenced a really tone-deaf photograph that Precious Ivanka took the other day with her kids at the same time that, of course, babes were being ripped from their mother's breasts at the border. And showing the photo, Samantha Bee said, "You know, Ivanka, that's a beautiful photo of you and your child, but let me just say, one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless runt." Only she didn't say runt. Now, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags immediately got the vapors and said it was a vile and vicious comment. And, of course, the white wing is all in a white, and I do mean white, hot fury, demanding the head of Samantha Bee on a pike. But it raises an issue. You know, that's an address. That's used as an address, not as a description. Not you are a feckless runt, but you feckless runt. It is name-calling, as it were. Here's the problem. And it's always the problem of language. How do you manifest absolute disgust with, absolute detestation for? How do you make it plain the degree to which you loathe someone all the way down to the ground and to the very last molecule of their existence? How do you do that without resorting to strong language? And before I get an email from him, no, that word that rhymes with runt is not a racist word. It is a misogynistic word. Because descriptions matter. Now, I will tell you that since then, Samantha Bee has apologized. I wish to hell she hadn't. Because this doesn't exist anywhere near on the same continuum as the racism of a Roseanne Barr. This is a wickedly sharp, smart, funny woman who knows damned well what words she is using and has used them to try to penetrate, to lacerate the veil of privilege and fecklessness that surrounds privileged, pumped-up, moneyed monstrosity like Precious Ivanka. And maybe you disagree. That's okay. But I really don't think there was an apology called for. Now, taking a different tack, however, Sally Field, the Academy Award-winning actor, Sally Field took issue with what Samantha Bee said. She tweeted, "I like Samantha Bee a lot, but she's flat wrong to call Ivanka a rhymes with runt. Rhymes with runts are powerful, beautiful, nurturing, and honest." In other words, damning with faint praise Precious Ivanka, who is, by contrast, not powerful, beautiful, nurturing, and honest. But Samantha Bee has since apologized because they probably would have put her head on a pike over at TBS. I would like to sincerely apologize to Ivanka Trump and to my viewers for using an expletive on my show to describe her last night. It was inappropriate and inexcusable. I crossed a line, and I deeply regret it, said Samantha Bee. You know why Samantha Bee had to say that? Because Samantha Bee is not wealthy enough or powerful enough to be able to stand by her words without being compelled to away from them. Someday, maybe, there will be an entertainer or someone in the public spotlight who has enough wealth and power to be able to refer to these disgusting monstrosities of the Trump family exactly as they are. And when they say, oh, you've got to apologize, look at the likes of a Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags and say, shut the fuck up, you piece of shit. Bring her to my office. I will look her in the face and say it again, because she is that awful. She is that horrible. She is that worthless a member of the human race. She is that disgusting. Because she is. In a just world, she would have been thrown out of her synagogue 2 years ago. She would not be invited into anyone's home. She would not be allowed around anyone's children. People would spit on the ground at the mere sight of her or the mention of her name. And she would be anathema. She would be like Princess Buttercup in The Princess Bride, in that dream where she's walking through and the old crone looks at her and says, boo, boo, boo. And that's what she would be met by each and every day of her entire life. And the same goes for dipshit Donnie, dishonest Donnie. Because they are awful, irredeemable, pathetic excuses for members of the human race. But no, Samantha Bee had to apologize. And then TBS followed up and apologized some more. Samantha Bee has taken the right action in apologizing for the vile and inappropriate language she used about Ivanka Trump last night. Those words should not have been aired. It was our mistake too, and we regret it. Yeah. So, they win. They win again. Samantha Bee uses language that was perfectly appropriate for referring to a horrible, horrible, disgusting, revolting attempted member of the human race. And she's the one in the wrong. You know how you know that Ivanka Trump has no morals? Because she continues to speak to her father, who has even less. And this is where, as I said, we run up against the limitations of language. How do you explain to a person how much you despise them? How do you explain to a person that you loathe? See, I'm looking for words here. The very air that they breathe, that whatever air they displace to stand or sit or be, is air that itself has been rendered putrid. And that is the purpose. That's the purpose of language. James says, I just hope she reserved the right to revise and extend her remarks. She should have added, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as Marty points out, of course, as a reply on one of Sister Carol Baker's posts on Facebook, someone posted a photo from a Trump campaign rally of Trump supporters wearing a T-shirt with that word, the one that rhymes with runt, above a likeness of who? That's right, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Marty says, and you're right, Samantha Bee had nothing to apologize for. And you know, along the same lines, this is just one of those quotes that sticks with me. That line from John Kennedy, in which he said, "Those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable." Well, there's something along those lines that applies here as well. In other words, if you limit one form of expression, you make another form of expression that you like that you like even less more likely. So by telling the world that one cannot speak, this is what it boils down to, whether it's TBS or whichever right-wing, white-wing POSs are out there complaining, when you limit the degree to which one can tell the truth about a human being, we limit the, or we actually encourage the possibility that something far worse will be done. And of course, as Roseanne learned, free speech she had. What she did not have were free consequences. And Samantha Bee had to apologize so that she would not have to face the consequences of losing a program that she has worked her ass off her entire career to have. Meanwhile, cranking up the wambulance to 11, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, who again is another one of those people who is so vile and so disgusting that it challenges language to be able to describe her, said, "The collective silence by the left and its media allies is appalling." Well, I'm not being silent. I'm proud of what Sam B. said. I applaud Sam B. for saying what she said. It was the right thing to say. It was a good thing to say. But nonetheless, way up there, up on the cross, Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbag said, "Her disgusting comments and show are not fit for broadcast, and executives at Time Warner and TBS must demonstrate that such explicit profanity about female members of this administration will not be condoned on its network." Interesting that she referred to precious Ivanka as a female member of the administration. Because, you know, that they've kind of gone back and forth on that. I cannot think of anything awful enough to happen to Ivanka Trump or Jared that would begin to approach a meeting out of justice for the awfulness that they have helped to foster upon the human beings of planet Earth. Ron in Raleigh writes, "Bob, can I call her a feckless twat? No, I'm all out of invective." I know, and you know, it's an anthropological thing why it is that we reach for body parts. And it's a conversation that I have with myself and we've had here among ourselves over the years as to how it is that one's anus or one's reproductive glands or organs become an insult. Why, for instance, is it worse to be referred to as a vagina, or a euphemism for a vagina, than to be referred to as, say, a nostril? When's the last time you heard someone referred to, "Why, you're disgusting, you sicken me, I despise you, God damn you, you nostril, you"? It's again, it's about the freight that language carries. And so we are called upon, I suppose, to be more creative in our invective. We are called upon to be more more astute in the manifestation of our disgust. But the problem is with the entire entire disgusting family that should never have been born, without whom the planet and the people who live on it would be dramatically better off. The problem is how to say those things without running afoul of the law. Because now, if I was to say that, some person I don't like should be run over by a bus. Well, I can generally be understood to have the right to say that. But as a function of law, you are not allowed to say that about Donald Trump or any member of his family. There is a term, lèse majesté, L-E-S-E-M-A-J-E-S-T-E, lèse majesté. And it is a, it's a term out of the olden days. It goes all the way back to the ancient Roman Republic. And what it boils down to is saying something bad about the ruler. Just a few examples. Several years ago in Kuwait, an Australian woman was taken into custody, held under arrest, because she insulted the Emir of Kuwait when she got into an argument with Kuwaiti immigration authorities. She didn't even say it to the Emir, but she was held on a charge of lèse majesté. There's a law on the books in Spain. And a satirical magazine there was charged and fined because they published an issue that showed a cartoon of the guy who was then the Prince of Asturias and his lady wife having sexy time. They published that cartoon on the cover of their magazine. You can get stuck in prison for up to 2 years in Iceland for saying something insulting about a country, a foreign head of state, its representatives, or a flag. Yeah, Iceland. And it can even be extended as far as 6 years in an Icelandic prison. There have been 18 prosecutions in the Netherlands for lèse majesté, for insulting the king, the heiress apparent, and their relatives. And you can get up to 5 years for that. We have tried to eschew such notions in this country, but in our law that forbids saying certain things about the President of the United States, we have our own manifestation of it. Steve in New York tells me Thailand has some of the strictest lèse majesté laws. As I recall, a man received 10 years for stepping on a piece of money that had the face of the king on it. Silent R. Lamar points out, America needs the Republican Party to start drinking or smoking pot or something so they can stop fucking with the American people the way we want and the way we want to live. Flavio, with an observation, says, in regard to that sentence, do something about your dad, you feckless, rhymes with runt. My only criticism, says Flavio, is that for Sam B. to expect Ivanka to rein in her dad is to expect the impossible, since Ivanka is just like her dad. Why would she rein in something that she agrees with? Oh, and Man Cave there in the chat room says that's absolutely true about Thailand, Bob Kincaid. Thank you. And why the use of the words, the particular words, well, Steve says, because everyone knows sex and everything associated with sex is dirty. Well, that's probably true. And that goes back to our Puritan Western European hang-ups. Member of the administration, says James, in regard to precious Ivanka, more like a vacuum that sucks up loose gold and silver. Ron in Raleigh says, could we punish Ivanka and Jared by sitting them down and force-feeding them Carolina pulled pork barbecue? That'd fix them. Yeah, I can't believe you went there, Ron. Jesus. But I mean that's the challenge, and it's particularly a challenge for anyone who works in any kind of public medium, even a teeny tiny itsy bitsy little hanging on by a thread month to month radio program, is how to make clear how fully and totally and absolutely one hates someone like Donald Trump or his disgusting, revolting, putrid, vile, vomitous, fecal family without crossing a line. I don't necessarily know where that line is. And that's always the challenge with free speech. If it's free, there are no lines. But when consequences are imposed, well, it's a different matter. And you know, the Supreme Court has even recognized this essential conundrum. In the way that American constitutional law handles issues of defamation, libel, slander, in drawing a distinction between public persons and private. People who do not seek to be public figures have a much higher expectation of being free of free from such conduct than do public figures. In other words, the thinking being that if you wish to put yourself into the public limelight and under the public magnifying glass, that you are that you're kind of putting yourself out there for such scrutiny and such ridicule. You know, it's all embodied in New York Times versus Sullivan and Falwell v. Hustler. And the Falwell v. Hustler example is a perfect one. A fake ad published in Hustler magazine that implied that Jerry Falwell had sex with his mother, who I think it was also was alleged was a prostitute. And he sued Hustler and Larry Flint for damages and got his ass handed to him by the Supreme Court of the United States. Because Jerry Falwell despised the idea of free speech. Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Just a second here. It says, the left needs to stop apologizing. You can't take the high road with these weird wolves. And as to my my phrase, fecal family, Steve says, damn, Brother Bob, that could be construed as just as vile as the rhymes with runt word. Please do not apologize. Well, I meant it to be. The purpose of language is to convey meaning. And Samantha Bee was not trying to convey the idea that she had a mild disagreement with Ivanka Trump. She intended for people to understand that she vociferously, or to quote Herb Cain from a couple of nights ago, she vehemently disagrees with and does not approve of Ivanka Trump. And so, how was she supposed to do it? Nostril. How does it, let's see, how's that work? Do something about your dad, you feckless nostril. Do something about your dad, you feckless tonsil. Do something about your dad, you feckless ear canal. Do something about your dad, you... Ooh. There. Do something about your dad, you feckless colon. Not even... Do something about your dad, you feckless bowel. There. There. That's it. You bowel. A processor and conveyor of vileness. A processor and conveyor of filth. A tube full of shit. We may have finally found the right body part. Mm-hmm. And see, that's one of the essential problems. Nobody ever says. What they really mean, because we're trying to have civility. Like when two members of the House of Representatives who hate each other's guts, who despise the very air that the other breathes, refer to each other during floor debate in the Congress as my friend. He's not your friend, and you're not his. You hate each other. But you put up this false front of civility to try to make it appear that everybody's trying to get along when in fact they're not even. Maybe a little more vituperation is what we need. Maybe a little less apologizing. Maybe Roseanne needed to be left alone to continue pumping her filth into the world so people could understand what a filthy human being she is. I think I referred, I made reference to it a couple of nights, within the last night or two. It was the fact that nobody had the fortitude or the standing to go after Donald Trump and get up. Has anybody ever gotten up in his face and just put their nose against the tip end of his, disgusting as the concept is, and just poured out a river of wrath on him? I'm guessing the last person who did that was his nasty old Klansman daddy. Because there are some stories to indicate that his daddy was really rough on him. And maybe that's what needs to happen. Maybe somebody needs to get a centimeter from his nose and just start explaining to him what a horrible, horrible, terrible, really bad, no good, vile human attempt at a human being he is and always has been. In short, maybe somebody needs to treat him like his daddy treated him. Because that's probably the last person that he backed down from. Because we maintain this sham of civility. Oh, by the way, says Ron and Raleigh, stop telling us how to stop calling Ivanka a derogatory name for a female body part, Bob. You know, I think right up there with the obligatory Star Trek reference, we need a nightly stop telling us Bob thing. I had three of those yesterday. There were three stop telling us Bobs. One on Facebook, one in a messenger chat, courtesy of our buddy Chris from the Northwest Territories, who is presently about as far as from the Northwest Territories as you can get and still be on planet Earth. He's in Cape Town. Sent along a couple of photos that were just awesome. And where was the other? But I there was one on the program last night. Yes. James says, the reason Precious Ivanka won't question her father because there's a will, and that applies to all of his appendages. And then, of course, there's the 13 now. It's up to 13, isn't it? Brand new shiny trademarks Precious Ivanka has in China so that she can enslave a few more peasant workers to make her crap, her garbage. Flavio points out, and besides, that word that rhymes with runt is a perfectly good word. Chaucer put it in the mouth of the wife of Bath, for Christ's sakes. And here's the quote, just to prove it. What ails you that you grumble thus and groan? Is it because you'd have my rhymes with runt alone? Why take it all? Lo, have it every bit. Have it every bit, Peter. Beshew you, but you're fond of it. But for if I would go peddle my bell shows, I could walk out as fresh as is a rose, but I will keep it for your own sweet tooth. And I think it also appears in Shakespeare. Although instead of using the word itself, he spells it out. In a clever passage in which a man is praising the penmanship of a woman. So Robert in Australia tells me that episode of Samantha Bee's show has been locked away on YouTube, so I checked my ITV recording, and there it is. Samantha Bee actually says to Ivanka Trump, as one mother to another, do something about your dad's immigration practices, you feckless... Yeah. In that context, says Robert, I think it's a perfectly fair comment, and it's language that Ivanka Trump might actually understand. It's just a shame Samantha had to drag herself down to the Trump's level to attempt communication. But that's the larger point, Robert, you do have to use language they understand. Politeness and common human civility doesn't work on that gang of feces filled bowels. Elbert in Rhode Island asks, Bob, do you think Vladimir Putin could do it? Oh, Vladimir Putin could do it and make it and make dishonest Donnie smile and clap and beg for more. No doubt whatsoever. Marty asks, I'm just a translator here. Please find out from Robert in Australia if the word was bleeped. Apparently, I've heard it was on broadcast, though why TBS, a cable channel, would. I don't think it was bleeped, but Robert can tell us. Meanwhile, Charlie says, the stupid people that voted for Trump will eventually feel the policies of Trump. At this time, we should not be of any assistance to these people when the crash finally comes. Our economy is now tied to the world economy, thanks to Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich. If there's a drought in Kentucky, we need to send the ignorant, arrogant Trump supporters in Kentucky salt. And the only problem there is sorting them out. I understand what Charlie's saying, but by the same token, there is a question of, if we say, for instance, that people in Appalachia have it coming for supporting Trump, the problem then becomes, what about those of us in Appalachia who do not support Trump? Do we just get punished collectively along with the rest? I have no real answer. And this is just a program note based on what's going on outside right now. Usually, long about July, we start having a tendency toward little convection-based pop-up thunderstorms. Well, they've arrived about 2 months early, and it's booming and thundering outside, and that means that the rickety, antiquated, crummy POS coal-fired power grid that we have here in almost level West by Coal Trump Genistan may very well go out at some point. If I'm just talking along and then all of a sudden I'm not talking anymore, you're not hearing program anymore, well, that'll be because the power went out. It's already blinked a couple of times, and I've managed to stay on the air, but that is by far not guaranteed. So if the program disappears, it's not that I had a fit of pique and just bailed out. It is the god-awful electricity infrastructure in this state. An infrastructure for which they want an 11% rate increase, you know, because the shareholders need new solid gold toilets in their yachts. Yeah. By the way, answering Marty, Robert says, bleeped it was, but honestly, you could hear the word. You know how they half-heartedly bleep naughty words these days. Okay. Fascinating. Fascinating, Captain. Hey, look, there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. So that you know, that chewed up a good bit of the beginning of the program. It's by all, far and away not the be-all and end-all. There's actually, again, real news out there. And So, you know, there's vile and there's vulgar, and then there's vile and vulgar. Here's a different kind of vile and vulgar. Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is advocating the use of cannons now to shoot down, blow down school walls in the case of a mass shooting at a school. Someone named Allison Berry has written a column called School Shootings, This Cannon Fires Unbelievable Ammo to Blast Through Walls and Help Rescue Victims. It's a cannon that shoots water cooler tanks at high velocity to knock down walls. It just, I guess, didn't dawn on them there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda that children might be behind the walls. No, they just want, you know, anything to not talk about the root cause of the school shootings, namely the weapons that are used to do the shooting. No. A couple of things from the commercial world. You remember when we had the story about Dick's Sporting Goods deciding that they were no longer going to sell AR-15s and they weren't going to send them back? They were going to have them destroyed, and the little gun humping weirdos had a hissy. I ain't going to shop at Dick's no more. Dick's just sucks. Won't sell no guns. Don't love America. Well, they had their earnings call today, Dick's Sporting Goods did, after being informed by the Rifle Association, the wealthiest, most powerful terrorist organization in the United States. The NRA said, "Well, you know, you'll go out of business soon. Your profits are going to fall down and nobody's going to shop at Dick's anymore, you goddamn un-American sissies. Don't love the Second Amendment." Well, oops. Yeah. Yesterday, Dick's held its quarterly earnings call, in which they announced that first quarter income is up 3%, and sales have grown by 5%, and that was stronger than expected growth, and so consequently over there on the stock market, the shares in Dick's Sporting Goods went up by 27%. Goddamn Dick's out there making a profit by not loving the Second Amendment. The NRA was, well, wrong again. Because they're very good at being wrong, the NRA. A couple of weeks back, the NRA said, Dick's has inserted itself into a tight spot. See that what they did there? Gee, I wonder if Dana Lush or Coleon Noir or Greg Stinkfield wrote that. They're trying to be clever. Dick's has inserted itself into a tight spot from which it might not emerge unscathed if it manages to survive at all. Its business with Second Amendment supporters in particular may well grind to a halt. That's some grinding they're doing over there at Dick's. Grinding up 5% increase in sales, 3% increase in growth, and a 27% increase in the value of its share price. That's some grinding. Grind on. But you know that I pay attention to commercials, TV ads, that sort of thing. I saw one online, and I have to give kudos to companies. I try to at least give good recommendations to companies that get things right. And of course, Orvis has been for a long time a leader in fishing gear. Got a lot of good stuff over at their website. They have they started a campaign called 50-50 on the Water that aims to get more women involved in nature activities like fly fishing. And it's a brilliant campaign because, among other things, the ad that they created for it actually trolls an asshole who got mad at them for their attempt to become to foster a more diverse enjoyment of the sport by getting more women into it. I mean, this is not what I've started out to talk about, but this is one of the ads. This is the 50-50 on the Water campaign, and they start out, like I said, by trolling an asshole. This is great.
Sorry, I didn't get a chance to speak to you, but I wanted to call because I understand that Harvest has decided that they're going to have a full attack and start a battle of the sexes against men, promoting women to get in the face of men and be arrogant and have an attitude. And I think it's the wrong way to approach things. It's the wrong way to approach things by admonishing men, saying how you're supposed to treat the women, but the women should learn that they're not so spectacular. I can understand why Orvis is taking this pact of in-your-face attack, man. You don't want my business anymore? Men built Orvis. I put a lot of money into it. I'm returning the stuff that I bought. I will never buy another Orvis product, and I don't appreciate Orvis starting a battle of the sexes, and I don't like the track that it's going on. I'm not going to participate by supporting Orvis.
50-50 on the Water is a campaign aimed to build gender parity in fly fishing.
It's no secret that historically fly fishing has been a male-dominated sport, and we want to change that.
Orvis is building out programs to help break down these barriers for women. It's the natural progression of the sport, and we think it's the right thing to do.
You get the idea. But that is brilliant. Building an ad around being trolled by a misogynist. Genius. But this is the one that grabbed me yesterday. I mean, it just stopped me. I saw it and then I went and looked it up so that I could see it again and appreciate it. This is a beautiful manifestation of the ad maker's art. And it's even better when you've got the video to go with it, but I'm just sharing the audio because, you know, it's a radio program.
My grandfather got kicked out of school when he was 11 years old. I was told that he'd routinely skip class to go to a nearby creek to fish and learn the more important lessons outside the classroom. The school really didn't seem to care until he started bringing the more promising students on his adventures. Let's just say he wasn't invited back for the next semester. I can't help but smile when I think of that story and how I see that same little kid in him today, curious, passionate, and always wanting to share these experiences with others. My grandfather's name is Lee Perkins. He's 90 years old and he fishes or hunts over 250 days a year. After all the years of following him hunting or fishing, I finally got the opportunity to return the favor and hosted him on a duck hunt. It was truly moving how happy and grateful he was to be there. It was almost like he'd never been on a duck hunting trip before. As a young man, Grandpa bought a small Vermont-based fly fishing company called Orvis. It became a place where his ideas came to life and helped shape the fishing industry. It also gave him an opportunity to take a firm stance on conservation, with Orvis committing 5% of profits to protecting nature. He knows more about the outdoors than anyone I've ever met. However, it is his passion with which he lives his life that inspires me the most. I often wonder how at age 90, he still has the energy to keep going. but I know it's his curiosity in the woods and on the water, along with his love of learning new things, that drives him. It's obvious that more than anything, he simply loves sharing these experiences with others and ensuring that they will forever exist for the rest of us to enjoy. He has seen, accomplished, and experienced a lot in his life. I find it remarkable how humble and appreciative he still is about everything. He goes after life with a spirit of adventure and a curiosity that allows every day to truly be better than the last. It's the most important lesson that he's taught me, a lesson that we can all learn from. Thanks, Grandpa. Here's to all the grandfathers, fathers, uncles, godfathers, and the men that have made differences in our lives. Happy Father's Day. We are forever grateful.
It was just beautiful. And if you want to look it up, the name of it is Orvis Presents 90 and Counting. And it's almost like a double troll of the asshole from the phone call in the 50-50 on the water campaign. Because you'll note that the asshole, you start in the battle of the sexes, by saying it's okay for women to go fishing. And then they turn, you're attacking men. Well, you want to bet that asshole's an incel. And then they turn around and do that with Father's Day approaching. And it was just stunning. I thought it was just a beautiful, beautiful manifestation of the commercial art, or of a commercial as an art form. They made, in neither of those two ads did they make any attempt whatsoever to sell you anything. But by God, if you are someone who cares about things like diversity and equal rights and conservation and not paving or polluting every last piece of land, nature, or drop of water in this country, then maybe the next time you need some sort of outdoor gear, you'll think, hey, wait a minute, why don't I do business with a company that seems to have some ethics in its practices? Hey, I need a new pair of tennis, a new pair of sneakers, whatever. I think I'll go to Dick's, because at least I know that they're no longer going to participate in the slaughter of American children in their schools. Because we look for hopeful things. Maybe some companies are getting it. Patagonia, for my money, still leads the pack in terms of their corporate ethics. But retailers like REI, which is a co-op, and of course these are all businesses that I have absolutely nowhere near me. They deserve to have the word spread, and hell, I'm doing it for free. When they get things right. Because once again, consumer choices are moral choices, are ethical choices. I need to learn to fly fish. I got a lot of things I want to learn to do. Lay block. Need to get my carpentry skills from the way back in the theater shop. I need to get those out and work on them a little bit. So that's the first hour of the program, and we have miraculously managed to stay on the air. Yay. If you've got something you'd like to add to the conversation, you're more than welcome to jump in. The phone number, of course, area code 304-574-8178. Toll-free, 84 from anywhere, Canada, United States, Mexico. Toll-free, 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN. Very good. Well played, Steve. Well played. Steve in New York, a member of the fraternity of Steve, says, Dicks, they're going to have to take prophylactic measures. Good stuff. It's Thursday. That means that we also have the Green News Report coming, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. So jump into, and of course, Skype to Skype, anywhere on the planet. Jump into the conversation if you so wish, so desire. And otherwise we'll just see where the rest of the news takes us. Courtesy of Ron and Raleigh, a long distance dedication to Samantha B. Ron says Samantha needs to do this. This is Conversation Radio. Fundraising free for the final day of the month of May. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
Sure.
It's Thursday, May 31, 2018.
This is one of those days when you don't want to be right.
Hurricane Maria's death toll in Puerto Rico, 70 times greater than the official government count.
We were all looking in horror at the video that came out of Ellicott City.
Maryland town hit with second 1,000-year flood in 2 years. FEMA denies reconstruction funds to some victims of Hurricane Harvey. Plus, new study finds U.S. insurers are not ready for climate change.
All of those disasters and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This just in from the Department of Obvious Metaphors. A sinkhole has appeared on the White House lawn. It's true. It finally happened. The Earth is fighting back.
Go Earth. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we now have news that, yes, in fact, the death toll in Puerto Rico was far, far worse than originally reported.
Oh, yes. It's a heartbreaking and disturbing new study. It estimates that the actual death toll from Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico last year is 70 times greater than the official government toll of just 64. Harvard public health researchers estimate that at least 4,600 people died in Puerto Rico from both direct and indirect impacts of the storm.
And that's the lowball number.
Yes. Twice as many as Hurricane Katrina, making Hurricane Maria the deadliest U.S. disaster in more than a century. The most prominent cause of death was interrupted medical care, as victims waited weeks and months for federal help. In an interview with Latino Rebels Radio, San Juan Mayor Carmen Julene Cruz called it a tale of two disasters.
One was made by the environment, and the other one that was administration made. When I said we're dying here and you're killing us with your bureaucracy and your inefficiency, it was an SOS call.
That call has still not been answered. Donald Trump, right after the hurricane hit, said he was delighted that there were only 16 deaths. Well, he hasn't said a word since news of thousands being killed in the storm came out earlier this week.
And you may or may not be surprised to find out that cable news is kind of ignoring this study as well. Media Matters reports that cable news covered the Roseanne Barr controversy for about 10 hours and has only devoted about 30 minutes to Puerto Rico. Mm. The 2018 Atlantic hurricane season officially begins on June 1st. But subtropical storm Alberto apparently didn't get the memo. The first named storm of the season, it made landfall on Monday in the Florida Panhandle. It killed two people in North Carolina and brought heavy rainfall and flash flooding across the southeast. It forced evacuations in North Carolina after the heavy rainfall compromised a dam. And U.S. residents are still struggling to recover from last year's hurricanes, which were the costliest on record. Politico reports that in Houston, FEMA has denied reconstruction funds for many low-income victims of Hurricane Harvey because they did not carry expensive flood insurance while living in a flood zone, a requirement that many U.S. homeowners are not aware of. Half of more than 700,000 applicants in Texas were rejected for any aid at all. Meanwhile, cleanup is underway in Ellicott City, Maryland, after the second catastrophic flash flood in less than 2 years hit on Sunday. It killed an off-duty National Guardsman trying to help rescue others. The city received nearly a foot of rain in just a few hours. NBC meteorologist Al Roker connected the dots between these increasingly heavy storms and climate change.
The problem is we're seeing more and more of these heavy downpours. In the last 50 years, we've seen an increase of 55% in the Northeast, 42% in the Great Lakes, and 27% of greater rainfall and stronger storms. And that just continues to grow as we just continue to see climate change and more warm air making its way with moisture and causing bigger storms.
Good for Al Roker. Good to hear that on network television, finally.
Indeed. But the destructiveness of these flash floods is not just a consequence of climate change. Land management decisions, development in flood zones, aging infrastructure, and extensive pavement in the built urban environment are also crucial factors in flood events. Last month, Ellicott City received FEMA funding to build better flood controls after the last flood, but it came too late to be ready for this flood. Finally, a recent report from the Thomson Reuters Foundation concludes that U.S. insurance companies are not ready for climate change, that most have not adapted their strategies to address the whopping payouts associated with increasing extreme weather disasters. The lead author warns that insurers are treating weather disasters as isolated, anomalous events not correlated to climate change, and that means, quote, insurers that ignore climate change will not put away enough money to cover their claims.
Well, that's what government bailouts are for. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Alrighty then, we're still on the air. The rickety ancient coal-fired power grid is still with us. It's about 12, 13 minutes past the hour. A couple of notes before I go to the phones. Ron and Raleigh says, have the Isleys been listening to you on prayer meeting Wednesday? They have the hat down. Well, maybe it was me listening to them that got that all started. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky with a note. Scott says, I'm just about at this point, Bob. When it comes to Trump and his ignorant minions, my standard response will be, fuck them. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Just fuck them. And let's all be indecent while we're about that nasty business, friends. Indecent? I'll quote the esteemed human relations expert Red Fox for the best definition. If it's in long and it's in good and it's in deep, it's indecent. It's hard not to it's hard not to get that attitude somewhere along the way. Lovely note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line: my dad. My dad is a professional fly fisherman. One of the best, and long since retired from running a shop. He was pretty well known in his corner of the world, and even as far away as places like Germany. Orvis was one of his favorites in the shop. Growing up, I witnessed a continual flow of famous people coming through my house, from Dan Rather to Tom Brokaw and Diane Sawyer, as well as the famous clarinet player Benny Goodman and his sister, who was a lovely woman, along with many politicians and some as well as some relatives to William F. Buckley, all there to see my dad. Fly fishing really is an art form. No disagreement here. And it's something that demands patience and dedication and art. I mean, fly tying is an art. And why somebody would object to a program to try to get more people into it and out on the water, and, you know, women in particular. How dare they design hip waders for women? God damn it. Right. Jesus. Thank you, Darlene. Our fondest regards to your dad. Subject line, women fishermen. Silent R. Lamar says, really, Bob? Women fishermen? Darn, my wife's been after me to take her fishing again. I just thought she wanted to get rid of my body at the lake. Ooh. Silent R. Lamar gets a cowbell. With all of that, and more to go into this evening. But let's run over to the phones and check in with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hello, how are you?
Well, how are you?
Okay, I guess. Trying to absorb a lot of this stuff, and a lot of it not to pay any attention to, you know. But pursuant to first fly fishing, a lot of famous people have indulged in that sport, all the way from British royalty to Count Dinkula. That's one of his favorites.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And if he'll, yeah, and, Count Dinkula would preserve a little, you know, his own fly stream and fly fishing stream, you know, and screw everybody else's.
Yeah, I heard about that. Well, you can't really say too much else about him. But, you know, one of the things that's kind of intrigued me over the past couple days is Roseanne Barr.
Well, I know you were a fan back in the heady days of her first show.
Still am. And still rewatch a lot of the episodes. I mean, Bob, she did 227 episodes over a 10-year period from 88 to 97. And her show was a groundbreaker in many respects. Gay marriage, her mother being gay, and all kinds of other stuff that just really appalled a lot of people. I had friends who just couldn't understand, why do you watch that vulgar working class woman? And I said, because she is vulgar and because she does represent a certain element of working class, and there are redeeming social values to her show. And I think she's funny as hell. But, you know, looking back at Roseanne, Roseanne is Roseanne and Roseanne as a nut, as a nut, as a nut. She's crazy, is crazy, is crazy at times. I think sometimes she just forgets to take her medicine or pretends like she can do without it. I mean, after the first Roseanne from '97, she had a program on there in which she tried to be some kind of talk show host. It's using Michael Fishman, who played DJ. Well, that fell through. And then she had something that would periodically come from her residence in Hawaii called Roseanne's Nut, which was just kind of strange and kind of strange, but it didn't have the attraction of the former show. And now with these last, how many episodes did she have? Two, and they both had run off the air?
I really don't know.
Well, the girl who produces, or the young lady, the lady who produces
Wanda
that
Sykes?
Show, no, Sarah Gilbert.
Oh, okay.
Sarah Gilbert's the one who played Darlene. And Darlene was one of the funnier characters on that show.
Right, and Wanda Sykes is one of the producers as well. Okay.
Right, and then there was Ted, somebody else, and she was always having some type of contretemps with him. But, you know, she said it. It's gone. The show's gone. It'll probably come back next year. But Roseanne will never be anything other than Roseanne. And that's it. That's just Roseanne. And I don't like what she said. It was stupid. But that's where Roseanne goes off the script. She was always doing that with the first episode.
Well, and, I mean, I remember all the drama with Tom Arnold and the tabloid attention and everything. But I thought we learned a little bit when she blamed it on a pill.
I don't know. You know, she has a very, very deeply flawed childhood.
Oh, Agnes looked it up and showed it to me, and that's some weird stuff.
Yeah, she really did. I mean, I tell you the truth, I felt sorry for the woman and was really very impressed to see that she was able to overcome that and, you know, become one of the leading stars on TV. I mean, nothing exceeds like success. Nothing exceeds like excess. And I guess Roseanne crossed the barrier of being successful into being excessive and not minding her mouth. But if you look at some of the HBO specials that she used to do, from Las Vegas and places like that, look out, friend. If you haven't seen them, you better be fastening your lap strap, because she really got into a lot of stuff. And I have also seen a lot of other black comedians get into specialties, but they really tell it like it is and have the whole audience falling in the floor laughing, including me.
Well, and but I think there's a difference there, Jim. She was not that. That was not comedy. That was her participating in a threaded. Well, threaded's not the right word. The Valerie Jarrett stuff and the ape stuff exists on a continuum. Inside, you know, not just Trump, but inside the white wing in general. She wasn't trying to be funny. She was trying to dog whistle to the Trumpanzees and the white wingers that she was with them, that she is one of them.
Perhaps so.
And it worked.
But, you know, that was Roseanne number two. In the first episodes of Roseanne, the 10-year period, her best friends were black.
Yeah, that's the way the show was structured.
Exactly, and you know, it was all about acceptance and overcoming racial divides. It was very progressive for its time, and I hate to see what it has become. I really do. I mean, I think Roseanne is just, and best let Roseanne be Roseanne be Roseanne, and that's it. And in the end, as she said, one of her comedy shows, when she got pregnant and she couldn't be on the show, and she just looked at the camera and she says, "But I will get paid." And that's the bottom line there.
Well,
you know, she's getting so much publicity over this thing.
Oh yeah, and sure, there's that old argument, Jim, that there's no such thing as bad publicity.
That's it.
And it may be very, very good for her over on over in the fetid, swampy quarters of the white wing. She may make a fortune out of it, but what she had, but it was also an it was also a learning opportunity in which she found out that there are consequences to what she said. And
well,
and you know, you have a right to free speech. The government cannot suppress your speech, but the government is not ABC Disney.
No. Because they realized that perhaps it was not going to be the moneymaker that it once was,
or that it was going to be a drag. I mean, the show was doing well; it was well viewed, it was popular, but her conduct was going to be a drag on everything else at ABC.
Bob, it always was the president. She was always getting into fist fights with producers and stuff like that. And I don't know how many different producers she had in the first Roseanne series. I mean, she really got into it. And I think there may have been certain occasions when she, well, like Red Fox once, you know, Red Fox had a problem with his producer. He wasn't getting enough money. So he laid out the show for a number of episodes until he got what he wanted or decided he had to come back to work.
Yeah, and but always, this is. I think if this was going to largely turn on publicity, I think it would. I think it's different insofar as it takes a lot for your agent to fire you. And ICM, yeah. her agent, dumped her like a hot rock because they understood that this was not her character on the TV program. This was her showing who she really is.
Well, like, she had been a different... perhaps she was a different person back during the days of the first program. I don't know.
Well, you know, in 2012, she ran for the Green Party nomination to run for president. She lost to Jill Stein. And then she ran on the, I forget, People Power whatever party, and got that nomination. That was allegedly and ostensibly progressive, but like some others out there, maybe she saw an opportunity to tap into a market with the maggots. You can certainly say that. There are some broadcasters out there who used to be known, and in this medium that I work in, there are some broadcasters out there who used to be known for being progressive. And with the arrival of Trump, they've gone full maggot.
Wonder why?
Well, I guess it's a good dollar. Big dollar.
I think you're right.
And because there's no getting around the fact that when you compare left progressive liberal broadcasting to right-wing hate radio, there's a lot more money in that hate radio. A ton more.
There sure is. I mean, it's just like everything today's news media, market, whatever you want to call it. It's always for what money. Somebody has said something that has offended somebody else, or they've been blacklisted. Or every day we have, somebody is having to apologize for something. It's getting to the point where it sure as hell doesn't sell any news with me. When I hear about it, I just turn it off. I don't want to hear it. I mean, it's gotten to the point where it's just almost ridiculous. Number one, why do people say stuff like this knowing fully well it's going to have repercussions, and then you've got the blowback, and the full-time media has something else to talk about other than Mr. Trump and his filth and ridiculousness and, I can't even use the other word to describe it, his assholiness. So, I mean, It's just ridiculous to me. The whole thing is, why do these people say stuff like this? Now, this lady who said the C word, or whatever you want to call it, she knew what the hell she was saying when she said it.
Yeah.
There wasn't anybody up there, getting her angry, where she just said, I've seen people go off the charts on some of these programs. God, I never will forget when I saw, the first time I ever really saw anything like this on TV was between William F. Buckley and Gore Vidal. Remember, did you ever see Firing Line?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Remember the episode that he and Vidal had? And when Vidal accused him of being a fascist, and then Buckley called him all kinds of names, and said he was going to sock him until he would never be socked as well again. And Howard K. Smith was up there between them trying to say, gentlemen, gentlemen, gentlemen. I mean, that thing, it went from 0 to 60 in less than a minute. And, of course, Buckley and Vidal came on that show loaded for bear.
Oh, sure.
For each other. And, they thought that they could get a little fire without too much consequence. Well, they got both. They got the consequences, they got the attention, and of course Buckley, his firing line continued. And, I used to see Buckley sometimes sitting up there in his chair with that pad, his legs crossed, and trying to, act like his shit didn't stink. And, it's a funny thing. Their family lived in my hometown.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. My grandmother and my mother knew William F. Buckley's mother.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. And
there was something about William F. Buckley.
Boy, my grandmother just thought that he was a very badly brought up young man. And knew his mother Eloise. And they had homes not too far from each other. And William Buckley had a python as a pet, and that damn snake got out And a lot of people were just scared to death. It was in the upper part of Camden, the wealthier northern part, as they call it, then and there. And my grandmother's home had this big porch and all these big wisteria vines over the top. You see pictures of Southern Home.
Oh, yes.
And my grandmother would like to come out in the morning and sit and have her coffee or tea or whatever, and often had breakfast on her front porch as a, you know, and...
Oh, no. Tell me no.
Well, and my grandmother was sitting there, and that big wisteria vine, which had been there since the Civil War, I'm sure, started to move. And guess who was up there?
Him.
Uh-huh. His face. And Nana got up, went in to call Eloise. They were on first-term basis. And she says, I think your son's pet has been found. Because they had put out notices all over the neighborhood that there was this huge python. I don't know how big it was. It's probably exaggerated. But there was a big snake. And people... But you know what those snakes can do? Yeah, it was there. And she just always referred to him as a very badly young, brought up young man and could not stand him.
Just sitting out on the veranda taking your coffee, and there's a big-ass boa.
Up in the wisteria. I mean, she had wisteria vines on that porch. The vines themselves were like an inch and a half thick.
You know what? I think you need to work on a memoir, Jim, and I think we just came up with the title for it. Pythons in the Wisteria and other Southern and other tales of a Southern upbringing.
Well, you got a point there. I've been thinking about that. As a matter of fact, there's a.
I like that a lot, though. Pythons in the Wisteria.
Well, there you go. In more ways than one, and of course, Bill Buckley made his mark on the world. And I have several of his relatives on my Facebook page. And occasionally correspond or have comments and say, I like that, you know. His, I think it's one of his daughters. And I know it's one of his sons, Claude. Yeah. And I still, you know, my sister's much better friends with these people than I am. Because I'm considered to be the renegade of the family. And the one who puts stuff on Facebook that the Buckley kids don't like to read. don't hear too much from some of them. And I even had a conversation on Facebook with Claude.
You know, I always pictured William F. Buckley as being one of those up east, you know, because of that, you know, the way he spoke. He seemed like one of those, northeast patricians.
Well, he was. They just came down to catch Shatka to winter.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
They came down. You know, Camden was known for its salubrious climate, and it was a big horse town. I mean, you had people like the DuPonts who settled there for the season. You had Mrs. Randolph DuPont Scott. Yeah, one of them married Randolph Scott, the actor. And was the founder of the Carolina Cup, the biggest horse race inside of the Mississippi, and the Colonial Cup.
I had no idea.
And, oh, yeah. Listen, I could ride before I could walk. That's just something you did in Camden. And, you know, it was a very unique, beautiful southern town, very genteel, and very southern. And so, you know, it's just one of the tales about the Buckleys, and there are others too. But like I say, I think I've been cast down from that area into which I was brought up in. So, well, I've always been the enfant terrible. Always me, I guess. But, you know, I can still have a polite conversation with them. And have good times about talking about former times and days and stuff like that.
Understood. So I, understood.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it was just a. I think another story was the excuse me, involving the. Oh God.
Well, I just got a. I just got a note from Barbecue Todd, also known as Quaker Todd, who says, "Yep, the Buckley Estate is less than 2 miles from me down here, and the polo field is only 2 blocks away."
And that house belonged to my great-grandfather. It's in my family.
I'll be darned. I had no idea.
Katka.
Yep. How's that spelled?
The way the peninsula is spelled. It's exactly the same way.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can remember as a kid, the first time I ever wore a tux, and our family was invited to a wedding at one of the homes there called Salubria, based on because of the salubrious climate, you know, and the pine and the big pineapples and stuff, welcome and all that stuff. And for that wedding, they had flown in Harry James.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, that was big doing.
Well, Todd, in writing in, and, you know, not disagreeing to be disagreeable, says, "Why can't we just say Roseanne is racist? She also has terrible things to say about Jews. It's no act. As a matter of fact, we don't even know if she can really be a quality actor. She was only playing herself." So, you know.
Well, I can't argue with that, but, you know. Roseanne is, I never thought of her as being racist, really, because of the way her other film was formatted. It seems as though she was the exact opposite because of her relationship with Chuck and Anne Marie.
Yeah. They of course, were that of course, that was the character and that was the writers, and that was not, you know, I mean, there's a distinction between the person the actor is and the character the actor plays. But.
Well, she sure played that very well. I'll tell you that. She sure did. She did. She did. Over. If she had, if she was a racist back then, she certainly did not let that come through in her character as well as was played for 10 years. No.
Let me ask you a South Carolina geography question.
I'll try.
Where is Hemingway, South Carolina, low country or up country?
I believe that's low country.
Okay.
And I'm not sure. Significance are any? Why do you ask about Hemingway?
Well, because I mentioned it last night, and I was reminded of the name of. There's sort of a barbecue mecca that I would like to try someday, and it's in Hemingway, South Carolina.
Well, that's a place where you need to go.
And I couldn't, and we were having the discussion as to whether or not, up country versus low country versus North Carolina versus South Carolina versus Memphis style, you know, what's the best kind, you know.
The best kind, in my opinion, is mustard based.
Yeah,
that is endemic to the Low Country and to South Carolina. And when you go into tomato-based barbecue, the taste is extremely different. Now, the best person who had the most commercial success with mustard-based barbecue was a guy named Maurice Bessinger, one of the biggest racists that ever came out of South Carolina.
Yeah.
And he had this place called Maurice's Barbecue, and until about 8 to 9 years ago, you used to be able to get the barbecue sauce on the shelves here. And Kroger took him off because of some comment he had made. He ran for governor, Maurice Bessinger did. Todd knows who I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm sure. I just got another note from Todd. He said, "Please tell Jim that my grandfather... was the blacksmith for the race course."
I'm sure he shoed a number of very famous racing horses. I'm sure he did, because God knows they had them. I used to excuse me. It's kind of something in my throat. I used to go to the Carolina Cup when I was a kid. And we'd go when I'd come back to my home. And then the last time I went was when a beautiful, beautiful horse broke its leg.
Oh.
They had to euthanize it, and they dragged it off with a bulldozer. I think they had an episode in The Sopranos that had something like that. Well, that's what they have to do. And it was just... Was his name Independence?
I remember when that happened, in one of the Triple Crown races.
Oh, yeah. And as far as the Carolina Cup is concerned, most of the people who attended never saw a horse.
Just
because they were all too drunk and having, you know, they were.
Yeah.
Utah. The very best English tradition. I don't even think Henry VIII probably had as good a picnic as some of these people had. God, God. I mean, they would drag out the family silver and tents and stuff like that. And that's what it was. It was a repetition of an English racing style. That's what it was, steeplechase racing. And, Lord have mercy, one year they had this big fashion thing with Madras. Remember Madras sporting coats?
Oh, yes.
And the thing that year amongst, the very fashionable would be to have men to have white duck, or women too, but they would have white trousers.
White duck trousers and a Madras coat.
Yeah. And that year it rained. And my God, those people leaving there, I can remember that because I was there. And that Madras had bled all
over. Oh, that's the thing. It runs. I mean, it runs when it gets
well,
wet.
See, you know, people never really understood the thing about Madras. When they say it was bleed, that's what it meant. It
oh,
was
I had
run.
I had a. There used to be a chain of stores that started in D.C. They were called Britches of Georgetown. You may remember them.
I do. I bought clothes from them.
And there was one of their stores in Lenox Square Mall in Atlanta. And I bought a beautiful, this is back when I was at CNN, I bought a beautiful Madras shirt. I mean, it was just gorgeous. You know, these rich reds and some faint pinks and some blues. I mean, you know how it was.
Oh, I've had many of them.
And I got caught in a downpour in that thing, and I took my shirt off, and it looked like I was Madras.
That's it. It would run. And you know, when it first came out, I can remember my mom and her mother, Nana, said, "I don't know what the deal is with all this. It's the cheapest fabric you can get, and it has no resilience, no lifespan whatsoever."
But God, in the summer, it was as light as a feather, and that's what you know, because it originated in India.
It would dry to India.
And consequently, could handle the sticky, the humid, yeah. But it didn't have a lot of staying power. I managed to hang on to that shirt for a couple of years, and I didn't give up on it, even though it ran all over the place.
It was very pretty, and they had everything made from it: belts, shoes, shirts, you name it, dresses. And you had some very, it was not cheap. I mean, when that stuff got over here and they were selling it, they were marketing it, it wasn't cheap at all.
And I tell you what, I miss that chain of stores. It died out years ago, Britches did, but they made the best khakis that I have ever found.
Really?
Yeah, I had a pair that lasted me from about 1986 to... God, I think I think I I was wearing them up to after the kids were born. And they finally just gave out, and I went to find it. Well, I got to have another pair of these, and, you know, britches is gone.
I didn't know that. I know there's another store in New York. I mean, went to Chicago that I used to buy clothes from and mail order stuff. They were Empire Tripper. I think they're gone now. But anyway, hence the stories about Camden and some of the people who live there. And let me tell you, you had a lot of very unique individuals who had some pretty unique ideas. And it was a place where the war of Northern aggression, as they called it, was not forgotten.
Oh, no.
And I can remember my father had a good friend, an old elderly lady. As a matter of fact, down the street from us, she had this little Victorian cottage. Her name was Mrs. Mary Johnson Jones. And she and her husband had been friends with my dad ever since my dad was a boy. And in 1939, her husband, Dad, committed suicide. And she had my dad was one of the pallbearers. And so she had the coffin in there in the parlor, and they sat up all night, drank, and played poker. And they called her Miss Dusty Jones. That was her nickname. And her favorite expression was, "Damn your soul." And her replies to the shock that people had about a regular drinking thing over her husband's coffin was a "damn your soul, damn the world" it that way.
Probably right, too.
And we had a Boykin Spaniel. That's the dog of the South. Dog of South Carolina named Rabbit. And Dustin would come down to visit my dad, and she would sit in the den. And that dog hated the sound of her voice. And she would get underneath the house and start talking, and that dog would start wailing and wail. And I could hear her, I can remember her say, "Jimmy Addison, you need to do something about that damn dog."
I'm telling you, we've got a title. You got to get busy on the memoir, Pythons in the Wisteria, Jim. It'll be big.
Well, I'm sure your audience has probably had enough of my excuse me. Very sorry. We'll try to do that. I'm sure they've heard enough of my mementos.
Your stories are legendary. You got another note from Todd. He says, "Tell Jim that the Carolina Cup was really fun this year. The weather was perfect. As always, plenty of great food and drink, a lot of fun. We have two spaces right on the rail. You can see the horses kick up the turf as they run past."
Well, my good, times have certainly changed. That's for sure. But still, it's a marvelous cocktail party. That's exactly what it is. And it is... It's very well known, and like I say, Camden was, and still is, I think it's been given one of the best cities in which to live in the country, if I'm not mistaken, the title of that. You can look that up. Well, it's highly ranked. And on that note, I will leave you to your conversations with other folks, because I know you've got other people hanging on the line.
Well, it's been a lovely conversation. I appreciate it, and you know, somehow or another, I've almost been transported a little bit. I can see those white duck trousers, and I can see that Madras running in the rain.
Absolutely. And are you having bad weather over there?
Oh yeah. The stuff that happens in July has gotten here 2 months early.
Well, it seems like the entire weather process has been accelerated for some reason.
Well, it's like it's been moved. It's like it's been shifted relative to the seasons. Oh, by the way, Ron and Raleigh just told me that apparently Britches is coming back. scheduled to open in 2018. Rooted in classic designs, Britches Online will set a new yada, yada, yada. Hopefully it won't just be the brand name they're bringing back, but the, you know, the quality as well. But that's good to
know.
Well,
that's good. That's good. They certainly are a well-reputed and excellent place to buy your clothes.
Yeah, and the same was
true. Because you got the money.
Right. And the same was true of, I don't know if you remember these guys. They were sort of an adventure outfitter kind of, but they were called Willis and Geiger. And they made fantastic, wildly expensive clothing that could really take a beating out, you know, in the natural world. And they died a slow, painful death. And their founder, a guy named last name was Avedon, is Avedon. He's up in his 90s, and he partnered with someone else, and they've come back as Avedon and Colby. And they do, and again, their stuff is crazy expensive. No way I could afford it, but it's good stuff. A lot of it modeled on gear that was originally designed either for the U.S. or the British military.
I think it was British, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, you can't, you pay for what you get. And a lot of handiwork and a lot of effort goes into clothing like that.
Well, they've got something they call bush poplin, and it's so tightly woven that rain beads up on it instead of
that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
And I mean, they make the classic old African safari bush jackets, and their travel trousers are awesome, and the basic shirt that they do just can't be beaten. And it's all natural fibers.
Well, I'll co-endorse that. Well, listen, you have a good evening, and you take care, and try not to get your trousers out in the rain.
No, I think I'll be staying in out of the lightning for the time being, because we've had a couple of righteous little cracks here in the last hour or so. That's why I gave out that warning that if the program just disappears, it's not me going off in a huff or a huff and a half. It's just, you know.
Oh, God, I remember the night of that derecho.
Yeah, that was weird. That's, you know, that's still out there in the archives. I was about 29 minutes into the program, and it was over. The power went out, and I wasn't back for 2 weeks.
I remember that. You lost a lot of other stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. Lost a ton. Lost a stove, lost a refrigerator, lost a washer, lost a dryer, lost a water heater. Lost the microwave, lost the toaster oven, just about everything that was not plugged into an uninterruptible power supply got killed.
Where did it hit? Just right outside your house?
No, it's just, no, that, well, I mean, the thing just, that was, oh, God, what was that, July the 1st, maybe, of 2012? It just boiled up over the hill. It had come in a straight line from Chicago. It was 90 miles an hour for 5 minutes, and it did that to the entire state. And when the crappy old grid went down, a power surge went through it that fried. I mean, we weren't the only ones to lose that kind of stuff. But it took the roof, and it took the appliances.
Oh, God!
And
it
took, you know,
your roof too.
A big chunk of it, yeah. And of course, FEMA was as useless as tits on a boar.
Well, they normally are.
And so, you know, most of that stuff has never been replaced.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the refrigerator, the stove, all that stuff. No. But
well, God, that was just
the washer, the dryer. Yeah, because, you know, there's just no way to do it. But it was brutal. It was just hateful. And, you know, like 5 minutes, and then it was gone. And that time of year, it was record-breaking heat. It got up to 104 degrees, I think, the next day or the day after. And the entire family was just sitting out in the car with the engine running, charging phones and trying to cool off in the air conditioning.
Oh my God!
And it was, I mean, it was a little taste of disaster, because there was no, you know, because the electric was out everywhere, there was no way to pump gas, and there was no, you could not find for your, to save your soul, a bag of ice, and what ice there was promptly shipped down to the Greenbrier for Jim Justice's golf tournament. He had the National Guard picking up brush that had blown onto his golf course.
I remember that.
It was before he was governor, and, you know, to hell with everybody else, his golf course. And of course, then karma caught up with him, and the big floods took out his golf course a couple of years back.
Well, I've forgotten all that stuff, Bob. I know. But, I mean, that's a... you lost a lot of your seal, your phone lines.
Oh yeah.
I mean, your Comtrex, is that what you call it?
The Comrex was a different failure of the. That wasn't during the derecho, but yeah, lightning ran in on the phone line and fried it. It was behind an uninterruptible power supply, but the lightning because the phone lines were improperly grounded by the company, the lightning ran in on it and fried $3,000 worth of equipment.
And no relief.
And I called to try to deal with them, and they were like, ha, 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 screw off.
Yes, that's simple. Who was it then, Frontier?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Those have got to be the most incompetent people I've ever talked to in my life.
Well, the funny thing is, they've got great on-the-ground crews. I mean, they're on the ground. They were the ones that found the bad ground and regrounded it so that that would not happen again. But the thing is, the difference is, their crews, the service crews are all CWA. You know, they're union workers, and that means they give a damn about what they do. But the people you call on the phone, tech support, or their executive class.
They're all contract.
Well, and they're all FUBAR and SNAFU.
Yeah, well, they're all contract people. They all are. And, you know, they're notoriously bad. They really are. Well, listen, enough about that. People want to talk, so you take care and have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Jim. You have a good evening as well.
Thank you, sir.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jim, and we'll keep it... Dadgummit. We'll keep the conversation going here, hopefully. Phones have been ringing a bit during the conversation. James out in Illinois says, I can keep listening to Jim. Good stories. But tell me that is not a perfect book title. Pythons in the Wisteria. I love it. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I'm all right, but the phone is acting weird again.
Well, this time this time I have not kicked anything loose, so.
No,
we're okay
I get
on this
that,
end.
But what it's been doing, haphazardly. I'm fixing a cup of coffee here, so let me multitask. What it's doing is voice control is kicking in on this crazy-ass phone at random when I'm trying to Skype or when I'm trying to make a regular phone call.
Well, that sounds positively delightful.
Well, and every fix that I've been able to find online, I don't know. It's just very crazy. So let's hope that it doesn't try to do that again, because it's irritating as hell. It's the Alexa-ization of everything. I wouldn't have one of those Amazon devices in my house if you paid me like $500,000. I wouldn't have one in the house, because I have shown over all of these years that I am perfectly capable of fucking things up to a fairly well. I do not. I do not need a machine to form on the job, you know? I don't. My life...
Wait a minute. I don't need a machine to form in the jog. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Standing there leaning on a goddamn shovel, you know, getting that handled for me. No, I don't.
Fuck it up some more, Scott.
I'm all for effectiveness, but there are limits. You know? But that's not why I called. Anyway, my point was...
Yeah, you're not fucking it up well enough there. Get... Slacker.
If it does cut out, I'll just call you right back. A couple of things. Jim will want to know, as well as the rest of the Horn congregation. He was made reference to William F. Buckley and Gore Vidal. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was added to the Netflix lineup was a documentary called Best of Enemies, which goes into exquisite detail of the long rivalry between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley, and it's highly recommended. I've watched it several times, and it just lays up the entire sordid mess. So there's that. And
Agnes watched that. Agnes watched that the other day. I don't know where I was, but she said it was awesome.
Oh, you've got to watch it, Bob. You've got to watch it. I've been out of the loop the last several days. Have you? How are you doing with Breaking Bad? Any further progress?
I jumped back in for the first time in a couple of weeks last night.
Okay.
So, you know, the no spoilers continues to apply, but I think I'm at like season 3, episode 4.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's only going to get better. More amazing, and you will be repeatedly gobsmacked by this program, but in a good way. Also, you and Jim were talking about Madras. Is it Madras?
I always heard Madras.
I've heard it both ways. But I remember that I mean, you could get sport coats and get shirts and ties and, you know.
Yeah, shorts.
But it made me think of a limerick I remember from Playboy Party Jokes many, many, many moons ago. There was a young girl from Madaz who had a magnificent Oz. 'Twasn't pretty in pink, as you probably think. It was gray, had long ears, and ate grass. So
dear
that's
God.
my lame limerick of the day. Punky, for Christ's sake, would you please hush? I'm on the phone with Bob.
Damn it, Punky.
I don't know what the deal is.
I don't think I've ever heard you speak so sternly to Punky.
No, he knows I love him. He knows I love him. I send out good thoughts to him and chirps the cat every night when I'm at kneeling by my bedside saying my little devotions. Well, I'm not kneeling exactly. I'm in bed. In the fetal position, wondering.
Just huddled up sort of hunkered down at the end of the day.
Yes. And
wondering what tomorrow will bring.
Exactly. But, you were talking about Britches of Georgetown, okay? And extolling the virtues of their fine selection of clothing.
Yes.
And several years ago, almost 10 years ago now, HBO Films did a documentary called Schmata, Rags to Riches to Rags, which talks about the clothing industry in America. And here's why I think, I hope not, but I think that the new britches is little more than a name revision or revisit. In 1965, 95% of American clothing was made in this country. In 1975, 80% of American clothing was made in this country. In 1985, 70% of American clothing was made in this country. In 1995, 50% of American clothing was made in the U.S. And in 2009, the year that this documentary came out, 5% of American clothing was made in this country. So think of all the jobs and all the union care and quality that went by the boards as we just crawled over one another to be first to offshore the textile and clothing industry in this country. And with very rare exceptions, I mean, I bought a shirt, a denim shirt about 6 months ago. And I specifically looked for a place, and it's called joesusa.com. And it's the best damn denim shirt I've owned since the days Ralph Lauren actually made his clothes in this country years and years ago. And what turned me onto them was I ordered a shirt.
Damn it, in mid-story. Well, let's see. Scott wasn't kidding. Okay, let's pick up where we left off, Scott. Nope, didn't connect. Well, let's try again. Okay, this time?
Yeah, hopefully it'll work. I think what it is this headset. Usually about, I'm really hard on my headsets, and after a year, they start getting kind of hinky. So I'm trying it without the headset. But anyway, about a year ago, I bought a Ralph Lauren shirt online, and they got it. I ordered the right size and all that. It was a piece of crap. Flimsy material made in some godforsaken third world country and just awful. I sent it right back and demanded a refund. And then I found this place, Joe's USA. And I'm going to start buying all my clothes there because it's all made in USA.
Well, I've never heard of the place. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I found them on Amazon. Like I say, about 6 months ago, and it's just a wonderful, roomy, well-made, hefty shirt. And I was just in, and you can't find denim shirts the way they used to be made in this country 35 years ago, because I love me my denim shirt. I mean, my uniform of the day is jeans, a T-shirt, and a denim shirt. I mean, if I've got to go somewhere and they won't take that dress code, fuck them. They didn't need my presence.
Well, I'm looking at their site now. I'll have to browse it more thoroughly.
Okay, yeah, bookmark it and check it out to the extent that I'm able to do it, and in today's world, it's really difficult to buy made in America. I wonder if there's a company in this great land of ours that makes muzzles for cockatiels. I would certainly order one. Did you hear that?
Oh, no. No, he was dead when I took him out of the vice. Yeah, that joke.
You know, I used to brandish a box of shake and bake for cockatiel at him when he got like this, you know, shaken menacingly.
And I helped. It's not fried, Daddy. It's shake and bake. And I helped.
I helped.
Yep.
But I don't know. I'm all over the place topic-wise. You were talking about Roseanne. Jesus, what a train wreck. What an absolute train wreck. And you know who we have to thank for Roseanne?
No.
Is Johnny Carson.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, he introduced her to the world, yeah.
Yeah. And he thought she was great. And back then, she probably was all right. You know, funny, original, different, blah, blah, blah. But there's something about fame that will mess people up every time. Not everybody, but there's a lot of people who are susceptible to being messed up because they start to believe, well, it's like Trump. They start to believe their own damn press releases. And it's
and they don't get challenged.
No, they don't. And the thing about Roseanne is she may have taken it half a step too far compared to what Trump usually does. Trump apparently knows that sweet spot that you can't go beyond without inflicting, you know, reputational problems. But Roseanne thought she was going to pull a Donald Trump, and she just didn't do it right. She didn't. She knew the words, but she didn't have the music, you know? I'm about ready to put this bird in the bathroom. Come on, bird.
Well, better there than the freezer. What? Yeah, okay, yeah. But what did the chicken do?
All right, you chicken fuckers, come on up here on the piano with me. Let's see. Let me pull the curtain back. Makes a lovely noise. Come on, punk. Yes, come on. Sit up here and visit with your friend in the mirror. Maybe that'll work. Hate to do that to him, but he just, that incessant shrieking. You know, their little heads are like hollow. It's like having a whistle attached to a feathered body. What's he doing?
Oh, no, yeah.
I'm all the way out here in the fucking living room. Oh, that little bastard.
He's feeling his, well, he's not feeling his oats. He's feeling his birdseed today.
Yeah. Well, next season, the NFL referees are going to do away with conventional whistles.
And they're just going to carry a cockatiel on their shoulder?
Yeah. No, around their neck on a little lanyard. Jeez. But anyway, getting back to Roseanne, I think Andy Warhol said that, what did he say? In the future, everyone will be world famous for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And he said that supposedly like 50 years ago. And damned if he's not right.
Oh, I think so.
But the shelf life of fame is limited. And it's got to be handled correctly and stored correctly. And responsibly, and boy, you can tell it when it's not done correctly. Jesus.
Oh, no, I know.
But I was impressed with the speed with which ABC dumped that series. And you got to figure with it was the ratings monster of the year, anywhere from what 16 to 21 million viewers on broadcast television. Are you shitting me? That's big numbers. So they didn't enter into it lightly.
Oh no. Now, of course, because, you know, some attention was being paid to the racism issue and some attention was being paid to Roseanne Barr. So that meant that Donald Trump had to jump into it because that meant that you know, attention being paid is a finite quantum, and anytime somebody else is getting attention, that means he's not. So mm-hmm. I guess you've seen the tweets. Bob Iger of ABC called Valerie Jarrett to let her know that ABC does not tolerate comments like those made by Roseanne Barr. Gee, he never called President Donald J. Trump to apologize for the horrible statements made and said about me on ABC. Maybe I just didn't get the call.
Yeah.
And then again, and then today,
so
this morning.
Yeah, him.
And this morning, he was twooping. Iger, where's my call of apology? You and ABC have offended millions of people, and they demand a response. How is Brian Ross doing? He tanked the market with an ABC lie, yet no apology. Double standard. Jesus Christ.
Jesus. And the thing that was so inartful about Roseanne's tweet that launched this flaming paper bag of dog crap on the national consciousness was so ill-prepared. And there wasn't any humor in it, so there's that. Second of all, how long has Obama been out of office? The better part of a year and a half?
One year, four and a half months.
Okay, so with Obama went Valerie Jarrett. Who the hell in Trump land even knows who the hell she is?
Well, hold on. Hold on a minute there, Scott. This deserves a little bit of a deeper dive. Because that's the thing about the whole. You're right. It wasn't funny. You know, sometimes we snicker a little bit. You know.
Well, my point was it wasn't timely.
Well, that too. But you have to take into account the long memory of the paranoid white wing. Okay, even as we speak, there's some white winger out there who is furiously typing about Jade Helm. Okay.
Oh God. To quote another dated reference.
Another dire
prediction that never came true.
Yeah. But they hang on to it because it's all they have because they don't have any facts. All they had the Republican Party, the base of the Republican Party, the maggots, are nothing but a nasty wad of paranoia and insecurity.
You think?
Yeah. Yeah. And so consequently, they're constantly talking about Valerie Jarrett or, the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Really? And then you also have to remember things like the New York Post, wasn't it? The New York Post editorial cartoon. Showing the ape gunned down on the streets of New York.
No, I missed that one.
And it caused a great deal of consternation.
Now that wasn't like a King Kong reference, was it?
I'm gonna look it up here real quick. So I'll probably have it before somebody winds up emailing it to me. Let's see.
Biggest cartoon I ever saw about King Kong. It was probably in like Penthouse or Hustler or something. There's two police officers standing on, 34th Street in New York, the Empire State Building in the background, and there's this huge used condom on the sidewalk, and the caption, one officer to another, "Well, I guess we know what all the screaming was about."
The New York Post cartoon went back to, I'm trying to find the date here, February 2009. And it showed two cops, one holding a smoking gun and a chimpanzee with the holes blown in it on the sidewalks of New York. And the one cop says to the other cop, "They'll have to find someone else to write the next stimulus bill."
Oh, God.
So it was not only a reference to Barack Obama, the typical racial slur of Barack Obama, black man as being an ape, but it also was showing the police killing the ape.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was dog whistling that hit all the solenoids like a damn pinball machine.
Yeah, and that's what in talking with Jim, that's what I was getting at. The Roseanne thing, and that's where I was heading with you. It's not just that it wasn't funny and it was not timely. It's also that it wasn't original. She just took something that is bandied about the white wing cesspool internet and shared it along. And that's all, you know, that's all there was to it. It was no different than a tweet, you know, you might find from cranky old Uncle Cletus. Once he's gotten a few belts under his belt. Hey, God, there's kind of Muslim Brotherhood. Valerie Jarrett, Commie Obama, put on Fox.
Well, endless crazy emails from your dumb uncle.
Yeah.
Stupid shit that's been forwarded so much, by the time you get your copy of it, the width of the type of the content is what, maybe an inch and a half wide. You know how when you forward something, it reduces and
yeah, and Todd says Roseanne also likened Susan Rice to a simian some time back. Ron in Raleigh says Hillary's emails. Senator Ron Johnson was on the Devil's Advocate from Wisconsin today, still kvetching and whining about Hillary's emails and server, claiming that the investigation was a whitewash and a cover-up by the FBI. It's all they got. They're Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are their bête noirs, and they're still going on and on and on about them. Because they can't let it go because of that aforementioned paranoia and crippling insecurity.
Well, and see, what's interesting, politically speaking, is on the one hand, you have the speed with which ABC brought it, you know, ridded themselves of the meddlesome woman, okay, controversial meddlesome woman. Okay, they dispatched her in a quick minute, all right? In the world of politics, we have the luxury of time, but it's also the trap of time. Nothing happens quickly in the world of politics. Case in point, after Hank Paulson brought the first, what was it, 10-page bailout of the bank's proposal to the leadership of the House and the Senate in the fall of 2008, expecting it to be done in a day or two, Harry Reid said something that is probably should be etched in stone somewhere. He explained to Hank Paulson, Mr. Secretary, that the Senate, It takes a week to flush the toilet when the Senate is involved. You know, this is not Tang. You don't put a teaspoon into the water and stir it and instant refreshment. So the difference between the speed that ABC could utilize in getting rid of Roseanne, at least her program, we don't have anything similar in politics. We're still like 5 months out from the midterm elections this November, and we're more than 2 years out from the 2020 presidential election. But people are paying attention and are reading the signs in a way that I've never seen. And I, you know, some people say, well, you just, it depends on the media. If you're hung up on, you know, liberal media, so-called, then you would believe that. But I look around, I see what's going on, and there's even some rethinking, or in their case, thinking, on the part of some of the people who did vote for Trump, who see now, too late, unfortunately, that they bought the proverbial pig in a poke. You know, that this is not what they signed on for.
Do you really think that do you really think that there's anything resembling a substantial number of those people, Scott?
There are some. There are some who, I think I mentioned this once before, there are some who are not diehard Republicans, not diehard Democrats, or even independents. They go with what they're how they're feeling from election to election. And sometimes it might be a Democrat, sometimes it might be a Republican, sometimes it might be an independent. Sometimes they might.
And God only knows what they're basing their judgment on. It may be they may, you know, well, you know, I remember the old want to have a beer with him standard. I can vote for him because he's the kind of guy I'd like to have a beer with.
Well, but see, what I'm getting at is the diehards and the hat wearers, the MAGA hat wearers. I've given up on them. There's no hope for them. They're lost. Just set them aside for purposes of the discussion. Who I'm talking about are a chunk of voters who survived the Great Recession in 2008, who were pissed off to start with, who may have voted for Obama, for Christ's sake, in 2008. Thinking that he would address some of the problems, and after 8 years of W, would bring some equilibrium to the exercise, but due to the obstructionism of Mitch McConnell and others in the Republican House and Senate, Obama was boxed in large measure. And his good ideas could not be implemented. Such as they were, because he couldn't get anybody on the other side to lift a finger in a time of national and worldwide economic crisis to us. So the coming into two terms of that, okay, they were really pissed off. If you thought they were pissed off and scared in 2008, by the time 2016 rolled around, they were willing to believe any damn thing. And that showed up in the form of Trump, who has no more business being president than I do. And I dare say I've probably got more on the ball most days. I mean, I've probably forgotten more shit than this guy has ever known. But,
I have no doubt.
Maybe that's just me. Maybe maybe I'm living in my little, you know, frilly dress Pollyanna, freshly pressed and starched world, and I'm not seeing something. But my general sense at this point in the narrative is there are people, certainly on our side, who see a better way to go. And I think there are some on the other side who want to correct their mistake of 2006. And like I say, I could be absolutely, you know, wrong, but I would like to think that we will learn something from this. And we'll take what we've learned, and you know, if there's any redeeming factor in our system, we do have the capacity and the mechanism for self-correction if we know enough to use it. And maybe we're beyond that point. I won't discount.
Well, it's a little bit. It's a little bit like the impeachment conversation we had the other night, and I wasn't trying to be an ass about it, but. And I even, you know, I run some things past people whose, you know, judgment I trust. And I can tell you that both Dr. Bill O'Brien and and Boss Man Wayne are with me on this particular point, namely that it's too late for impeachment. Because at this point in time, it runs as much a risk, because you can't convict him in the Senate, and that just means he will be strengthened by having withstood it, which means you get Donald Trump 2.0 on January 20th, 2021.
Japanese monster movies.
Yeah, well, and as vile and hateful and disgusting as he is now, imagine how much worse he will be as his mind degrades further.
Mm-hmm. No, this is a Hunter S. Thompson moment. We've bought the ticket. We must take the ride. And it's going to be, you're going to have to white knuckle that bastard, from here until the ride's over, and then behave in a manner that's consistent of not taking that ride again. I mean, that how much more simple does it need to be, boys and girls, you know? And I know our people get it, you know, but, and we'll probably still, I hate to say this, because it defeats my own relentless optimism, but, you know, it's very possible that in the midterms in a couple of months, we will have found a way to fuck it up one way or another. And then where will we be?
Well,
I don't even want to think about that.
Look, I mean, I think I've stated it fairly clearly, Scott. If we do not succeed in November, we are so far past fuck, the light from fucked won't reach us for a million years.
We're all screwed, Bob.
There, that, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that needs to be the next bumper sticker. We're all screwed. But the thing is, the maggots are screwed too. They just don't know it. What's that in-out sensation I have in my ass?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, you're being screwed. Oh. No, couldn't possibly be. Trump's president. We're making America great again.
There's probably a psychological term, and I'm sure somebody knows the dynamic that I'm going to refer to, but it's like someone has been blaming a particular thing or a set of things that they perceive as having happened, and then at some point they find out that it wasn't that at all. In fact, it was their reliance on that notion that put them in the position that they have found themselves in. It's not denial exactly. It's even more insidious than denial. It's like buying into something that on some level they may even acknowledge isn't true, but it's what they need to believe. It's like that funny, and I hope there's not any children listening, it's that funny period in every youngster's life when the business of Santa, there's some point
when the business of what, where, you dropped out,
where the business of Santa Claus comes up.
Yeah.
And there's some point where you kind of go with it even though you suspect it's not quite the way that it's been explained to you. I guess that's one way of putting it safely, in case there are kids listening, or a few adults even. And that could be, you know, just as an aspect of the situation. Maybe on some level they know that it's not quite true the way they're describing it, but they've latched. The only dragon they know. It's that Chinese thing, I'd rather have one dragon that I know than seven dragons that I don't know. Well, they're, you're stuck with the dragon, friends. I mean, and reality, sooner or later, will rear its ugly head, and it knows where you live, too. As a matter of fact, those folks are even more at risk because they willingly participated in the scenario, in enabling the scenario that they will have found themselves in. You know?
Yeah.
And watching car races or wrestling or whatever their choice of diversions is not going to help them. And that's there's an existential terror that occurs when you realize that all the doors are locked. And even if they were unlocked, what's behind them is beyond scary. And that, you think people are crazy now.
Yeah, the monsters are real.
Yeah. And then you can carry it out another step or two. We've got more guns in private ownership than we've got people in this country. And what people know could fit conveniently in the navel of a flea with room for three caraway seeds in a loan officer's heart.
Yeah.
To paraphrase Fred Allen. So you've got heavily armed, you've got paranoid of shit, as shit.
Wildly insecure.
You know, wildly insecure. You've got, you know, just a loud fart would set some of these people off. They're so tightly wound.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, you just got a note in from Todd. He says, it's called living out a delusion. Then the crash comes, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And see, what we saw in the 8 years of the Obama administration with the white wingers was that paranoid, delusional behavior running absolutely wild. And their insecurity ran to the forefront because they were afraid that, you know, because we got one of them in our White House, well, that means America ain't never going to be all right no more.
Yeah.
And so now they're making America great again, making America white again. And as a consequence, they think things are going to be okay, and that's going to make it all the uglier when it does go to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, it took from about 2001 to 2008, that's 7 years, for Bush's chickens to come home to roost. Economically, I have a feeling, given what happened with the last tax bill, it's not going to take as long with this one.
Oh, hell no.
It's not going to take any 7 years. So, you know, I'd say if we don't manage to get him out of office, it'll probably come within, say, the first year of the second term. And it's not going to be pretty.
Here's another thing. And this comes under the general heading of shit that people don't know. Around 2010, a couple of years after the big start of the, and actually that wasn't the start. The start was a year before then, of the Great Recession. Around 2010, there was a documentary that was narrated by Matt Damon called Inside Job.
I remember that.
If you've seen it, watch it again. If you've never seen it, watch it. And then watch it again. Because it lays out exactly the causes and the beliefs economically and the mindsets of folks like, what's her name? Andrea Mitchell's husband, Greenspan. Okay? Who, you know, he got up there in front of Congress as the shit was beginning to hit the fan, explaining how all of his things that he had believed for 40 years were correct 70% of the time. Well, what kind of fucking answer is that? You know, it's this hands-off, laissez-faire approach to economics, supply side, trickle down, all that happy horse shit that in practical reality has been disproven time and time again. Yet we were, there were forces in this country who were lapping it up as fast as it could be ladled out. You know, all, even in the spring of 2008, when I guess it was Bear Stearns went under. I mean, to quote Red Fox again, when you can see the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. Okay. Even then, they were, you know, whistling past the graveyard. Everything's going to be fine. Just a minor thing. Pay no attention. Look over this way and get diverted by, oh, I don't know, something on TV. Maybe The Apprentice. There's your fix. God help us. I am so depressed now, Bob. I can't stand it. I have talked myself right into the room with the locked doors and
yeah,
the
but,
monsters
but,
on
but,
the
but
other
if you,
side.
But Scott, if you weren't, you would be in no better shape than the maggots. Because they're happy and they're happily deluded. I mean, this is. I was thinking the other.
What is the opposite of that? Is the opposite of that happily not deluded? Because if you're not deluded, you're not buying into the madness, and seeing it for what it is, and then you're scared shitless or witless or both.
Well, who's the happier person? The person who is shipwrecked in the middle of the ocean and doesn't know there are sharks in the water, or the one who does? Or not happier, who's the better, who's in better shape? If you know there are sharks in the water, you can at least say, well, you know, I'll bop the little bastard in the nose if he gets near me. If you don't know there are sharks in the water, the first time you find out is when you become dinner. Wonder what that funny thing, that funny triangle is coming at me.
Yeah. And it doesn't come complete with doo-doo, doo-doo.
Nope, no soundtrack, sorry.
No soundtracks here. But now, here's a deeper question, getting back to Roseanne for a moment. All right, she, within 24 hours, blamed Ambien.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's a whole nightmare list of incidents that have occurred on Ambien. Everything from car wrecks.
True.
By politicians to murders to God knows what else. But that misses the deeper question. Why can't she sleep? Sleep issues are symptomatic of something with people by and large.
Isn't it true that we have a harder time sleeping as we age?
Not necessarily. I've found in the last, you know, the last 20 years or so, and I've had reasons not to sleep in that time period. But more often than not, I mean, it's rare that I'll have a night where I just cannot drift off to sleep. And maybe that's just me. Maybe it's a sign of a clean conscience or something. But, why couldn't she sleep? Why did she need the Ambien? And why does she emulate someone who is known far and wide for his three-hour naps instead of actual sleep, which science has proven time and again, that sleep deprivation, hell, that's how they torture, not torture, that's how they enhanced interrogation. That's how they apply enhanced interrogation to people, sometimes known as torture. It's sleep deprivation because it causes brain chemistry changes and in your mental processes and in your take on things. It's not a good thing. That's why you need at least six hours of sleep, most people. So, and then some people were saying with Roseanne, she didn't want success. She needed to sabotage her own success. Well, where does that come from? What's that about?
Yeah, no kidding.
And I know I'm posing questions.
Well, no, I mean, I think the sleep issue is fascinating because one of my favorite, because I think I sympathize with it a little bit, one of my favorite Shakespeare lines is, and I've mentioned it a couple of times lately, I could be bounded in a nutshell and call myself a king of infinite space were it not for I have bad dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And Hamlet is not sleeping well. He makes that clear to us on a number of occasions. To sleep, perchance to dream, ah, there's the rub. And, you know, it's not that I have nightmares. It's just that I go to sleep and it's like I wake up the next morning and it's like I've been working. Because my brain is just going and going and going and going. And mm-hmm. I feel like Alex at the re-education center just sitting there, you know, from Clockwork Orange, just sitting there watching the movies.
Yeah.
And I've got a very busy, creative little brain that likes to make up stuff for me to watch. But you're absolutely right. There's that somewhat famous story of, I think he was a DJ who stayed up for 48 continuous hours or something ridiculous, maybe 72 continuous hours. You know, it was a promotional stunt on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And it ruined him. And he went quite mad. And he never came back from it. Psychotic.
Yeah. I worked with that guy. Wait a minute.
We know Trump doesn't sleep well. So, you know, what does that tell us?
Well, there's a myriad of things to be afraid of. Let's face it. There was a thing in the news the other day about at some missile installation out in like the Midwest somewhere, a couple of Air Force guys were found to have been using LSD and other powerful substances.
Oh,
and
goody.
These are the guys with the keys, okay,
yeah.
In the silo.
Right,
okay?
Yes.
We realize, because it's as if something has gotten into the bloodstream, you know, and it's making us crazy. It's almost like The Stand. You remember that Stephen King novel?
Oh,
big
yeah.
Book, what do you call it, doorstop of a book. And there was a miniseries on ABC, I guess back in the 80s or 90s or whatever. Hell of a book, okay? But if something has gotten into the system, the body, politic, and otherwise, and we're slowly or maybe rapidly going batshit crazy. There was a time in this country when, you know, do you remember Joe Pyne?
Can't call it to mind immediately.
Okay, he was a radio guy first on the East Coast and then in L.A. And then in the late 60s, he got his own TV show syndicated once a week. And he would have on some of the kookiest people as guests that you would care to mention. And also some famous people. But he was, I won't even say that he was was the Limbaugh of his time, because Limbaugh doesn't have guests as a rule. He was, I don't know who he was, but he was a right winger. But in the years that since, 40 some odd years, 50 years almost, 50 years, in looking at some of his video and listening to his radio stuff, a lot of which is on YouTube, I know that you can discern a twinkle, like a spirit of fun in the proceedings, even though he was like politically right wing. But he didn't take, I don't think he really seriously in his heart of hearts took himself or anything about it all that seriously. It was just an interesting way to make a buck, and he was quite good at it. Okay. I'll send you that. There was a thing in, I guess, Smithsonian about a year ago about him, and I'll send you that article, and you can look up some of the audio and video. And I'm not even sure why I brought it up. Oh yes, there was a time in this country when even disagreement in political discourse was not a blood sport. And now, figuratively and literally, it's a blood sport. I mean, look at the gun conversation. What's this I heard you talking about? They're putting water cannons up in school?
No, Fox, some freak over at Fox wants to use the, they're not water cannons. They are cannons that shoot water canisters and can oh. and can demolish a brick wall. And this freak wants to deploy those for school shootings.
Yeah.
I guess we lay, you know, when there's a shooter in the school, we lay siege to the school and start blasting away at the walls. And, you know, that way, little Timmy and little Cindy won't be killed by the school shooter. The little Timmy and little Cindy will be killed by the efforts to keep the school shooter from killing them.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
It would be so simple if they would admit that all of their crazy notions are just crazy notions and they're getting kids killed. Nobody, see, whenever you talk about responsible gun laws, okay, common sense, responsible, lawful gun laws, they jump immediately to, well, you're taking our guns away. You're taking all the guns away. Well, no. No, you obviously weren't listening, because at no point did anyone say, take all the guns away. You know, it's like we can't even have a reality-based conversation about anything, I mean, other than this show. And even then, it gets iffy some days, you know?
Yeah, well.
But, you know, you know what I mean. This is usually what I call, okay, to further muddle up the thing. But so let's look at some of these things. Let's look at why Roseanne couldn't sleep. What's going on that might cause her to not sleep and rely on, you know, a product which is not proven. That's another thing. They get all these psychotropic so-called medicines that are, I mean, the regulation is nil in terms of the Food and Drug Administration. You know, they don't test anything out. You know, they give it to half a dozen people and ask them, you know, how you feeling? Everything okay? And if there's, you know, six or eight people say, yeah, we're fine. You know, it's like nothing. And this shit gets, I mean, the deal with the stuff that they used to give kids, and maybe still do, for, you know, hyperactivity, you got to wonder how many brains that's rewired.
Well, and you know, that was part of the discussion that surrounded the Santa Fe shooting. It, you know, was when, who was it? Which idiot? You know, it's because the kids are on Ritalin.
What, was that Ollie North?
Yeah, that was Ollie North. Yeah, that was Ollie North, dumbass. Yeah. You know, because there's no evidence that's the thing, and because America is no longer a country that engages or values even critical thinking. People simply accept things at face value and don't demand evidence. If you're going to say that Ritalin causes kids to shoot up schools, you'd better, by God, have some damn data to back it up.
Yeah, show me your study. Show me your numbers.
And there aren't any. It's just, you know, well, I'm going to say Ritalin because I love guns.
Well, see, even on the right, there is some nugget of truth even in their lies. But it's a truth which has been skewed to take the spotlight off of them and put it onto something else that isn't true. Okay? Maybe what Ollie North should be saying, if he were honest, which we know he's not, is how many of these kids in the 70s and 80s that were on this shit, these mind-altering substances for so-called hyperactivity, hell, back in my day, it was known as being a kid, for Christ's sake, okay? You know, an energetic, enthusiastic...
bouncing around.
You know, kid. Yeah, okay. But how many of these kids in the 70s and 80s grew up to be in places of responsibility in media and government? And if they did, let's look at what their track record is, because there are studies on the viability and effectiveness of government policies and programs and methods that can be charted over time. You know, how do we know that, you know, what? I don't know the history of those types of drugs for hyperactivity. I'm sure there were early versions of them or something. Hell, for all we know, Trump might have been on medicines of this sort, or forerunners of medicines of this sort. I mean, because to have your own mother say, you know, what if we create it? What kind of monster? There must be something going on. You think?
We know that his parents shipped him off to a military school that was it wasn't one of the fine boarding schools of New England. It was a military school for boys who were absolutely unbearable. And had parents that were wealthy enough to keep them out of juvenile hall.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Trump went to school.
Well, and it was the motive was to straighten him out. Well, how well did we do with that?
Well, the military discipline what passed for military discipline just made him a bigger asshole.
Yeah, but it's probably more to it than that. I mean, we each deal with assholes in our day-to-day life. So there's that. But there's something beyond assholes. There's a dangerous isn't quite the word. There's an organic or a psychological layer over just being an asshole that kicks it up a couple of notches maybe psychopathic. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I read a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And much of what I read is reliable. It's not, you know, it's not this Art Bell stuff.
Right, exactly. Well, it's kind of like what Todd talks about checking in on Jeff Renz from time to time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that, again, that stuff that he did was a lot of stuff to keep you on the edge and stuff to keep you scared in the dead of night. You talk about people not sleeping. And my one interaction with him off the air several years ago was not a pleasant one. He did not like to be challenged. And by challenged, I mean presented with business information that would have been helpful had he paid attention to it. I'll tell you that story some other time, because I see by the old clock that we're into overtime.
We are there, but it's been a fantastic conversation again, though.
Well, and just the thing about Art Bell was just another diversion, not just to keep people scared, but to keep them focused on something likely unreality-based that's tying them up from being engaged and involved with something that they that is based in reality that they can do something about. You know?
Yeah, without a doubt.
It's a crazy thing, Bob. We're living in weird times. I mean, weird times.
Well, you get the last word. Say it, Scott.
We're all screwed, Bob.
Take care and go let Punky out of prison.
Yeah, he comes out of the penalty box and he'll probably shit on me.
Well,
that's
just,
his answer to everything.
Just walk him over to the freezer first, and you know.
No.
All this can be yours.
Yeah. You know, if the animal rights people knew that I was putting him in a room, they'd probably be at my door. I don't need that. I got enough trouble. All right, Bob. I'll
take care.
You go.
Later, Scott. Bye now.
See ya. Oh.
That's our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Darlene in Connecticut tells me that according to Frontline, Trump thrived at that military school. He supposedly did really well and was a top athlete, blah, blah, blah. Not buying it, really, says Darlene. Nor I. So that brings us to the end of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. It brings us also to the end of the month of May. And now we enter the solstice will be here in 21 days, something like that, yeah. And it'll be high summer. So we'll be back with Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. I hope you'll join in, especially if you've been itching to foment a discussion about something. Please feel free. You're welcome at most any time. Thanks go out, as always, to the merry little band that keeps this program on the air. Thank you, one and all. Thank you to those. Thanks to everybody for joining in and sharing the time of your precious finite lives, engaging in this conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.Live. Thank you very kindly to John Fox in Australia. Thank you. Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.